Hey, isn't it nice to have football games to talk about with all of this stuff happening off the field around the sport? What a day yesterday. You know, Brandon Marcello was in here on Wednesday, and we talked about how it seems like there's so many things that happen now where you step back and you say, that's unprecedented. And that was another thing that happened yesterday. It felt like an unprecedented day. We're going to talk about that some. We're going to preview Arkansas's game against North Alabama. They play tomorrow over at Razorback Stadium. I want to tell you that our podcast is brought to you by Eglin's Best in Arkansas. Greatness starts early, before the pads go on, before the crowd roars. The day begins at the breakfast table. Eglin's Best delivers superior nutrition with more vitamin D and less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can start strong with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. For more information, visit eglinsbest.com. We're also brought to you by Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. And come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We appreciate Kevin Trainer being with us at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club yesterday. If you want to go back and listen to our conversation with him, you can. We've got our podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Search Whole Hog Sports there. We've got video of all of our shows. You can find that on our YouTube channel, search Whole Hog Sports. We also put it on our social media channels on Facebook and Twitter. Interesting talking with Kevin and just kind of getting his thoughts on how, as a longtime, a Hall of Fame PR professional, Kevin Trainer, how he would maybe handle some of these things that have happened this summer, whether it be Texas Tech, TCU banning an entire publication from covering its home games, the only newspaper that covers them on a full-time basis, and then certainly LSU and what's going on right now there. I tell you, Tiger Stadium, Death Valley, one of the great home field advantages in college football. We found out yesterday it's LSU's second-best home field advantage. The best is the 19th Judicial Courthouse in Baton Rouge. The SEC, they walked into a buzzsaw yesterday, and you knew it was going to be pretty crazy. I mean, Louisiana's got a reputation for a reason, right? I mean, Louisiana politics, Louisiana has got that reputation for a reason. And you knew that it was just going to be a day when the Louisiana Attorney General steps up to the microphone before the case or before the hearing even begins, wearing what I assume is her game day attire, a purple shirt. And, she proclaims "Go Tigers" before the hearing even begins. Man, I think the SEC is ultimately going to prevail on this after they filed this claim in federal court. But I couldn't help thinking, as I was watching Ethan, all of the coverage of this last night, that it just seemed like a really sad day for college football when you've got a conference that cannot enforce the rules that have been agreed upon.
Yeah, for sure. And it's crazy because I went down there to Baton Rouge last year for that like really absurd 11:15 or 11:45 a.m. game between with two interim coaches. It just didn't even feel like it should be the real like battle for the boot game. That even on a like a Saturday morning in a game that really didn't mean anything to other than pride, I guess, to either program at that point, like it was still like a great home atmosphere. It's like all that matters in that city in Baton Rouge is LSU. Like that was the vibe that I got, is everybody who lives there, they live there for LSU and for LSU football. And it's just crazy because you like the state capital's right there too. Yep. And you just feel this sense of like, they're like so entangled together, like Louisiana politics and LSU. And I think we got to see that all kind of unfold yesterday, how much LSU kind of just runs a lot of the politicking there even. And of course, like you said, the Attorney General, how she's been like all over Twitter throughout the past few months too, just super out there as far as her opinion on these things. It's just they kind of, you know, it's not oil and water there. It's they definitely mesh together.
Well, their governor, that you know, he held the company line yesterday in a statement that he put out. You know, there's never been an attorney general of a state who's never looked in the mirror and not seen the future governor. And so, you're trying to climb the ladder, right? I mean, if you're the attorney general, you're trying to pander to the base to help your election, whatever you're running for next time. Maybe it's not governor, maybe it's a senator, maybe it's a Congress, maybe it's a lieutenant governor, who knows? But, you know, and then if you're a judge, you're up for re-election. That's the unfortunate nature of how the state court system works. And it's interesting to me, this is ultimately, I think, going to get resolved in federal court. The SEC filed a federal lawsuit against LSU, Lane Kiffin, the AD, the board of supervisors there at the college yesterday in federal court in Birmingham. This all really the in my opinion, kind of the linchpin for everyone to start running to the state courts was when the federal court injunction in Colorado got overturned by the 10th Court of Appeals. That is a stay on that decision. It was a 2-1 decision at the appellate court level. There's no guarantee, like this could potentially get overturned again, and everybody's got this blanket waiver again. We don't know how that's going to work out. But it's interesting to me, Ethan, that nothing like this would not happen in reverse, okay? Like if the state court says that you can't play here, you don't go run into federal court because the federal court's not going to say what you want about the legal system, and this is a topic that, you know, it's important to me. But I think at the federal level, you have people who actually are principled in those positions. And I know people might scoff at hearing that, but I really do believe that's true on a very large scale basis. If you get into one of these U.S. district court judge positions or you're on a court of appeals, I really feel like there's a lot of principle there. The state courts, I think, when you have elections, that's where you get the activist type, you know, that are on the bench. And it just, I guess what I'm saying is it really shines a light on the difference between the state court system, the federal court system. And again, you're not going to see this in reverse where the federal court is going to allow, you know, this kind of business to happen if it's been, you know, disallowed at the state court level. But unfortunately, at the state court level, in a lot of cases, it's been, you know, kind of a mockery of the judicial system, to be honest with you. Yeah.
And that's what makes it interesting now to know, like, what is LSU going to do? Are they going to put these players on their official roster knowing that...
They got to decide that today.
Yeah, knowing that, you know, because of what happens in federal court...
They've got to. You don't go through this whole thing just to say, okay, well, we were just going to see how that turned out.
Yeah, well, if they... They're certainly taking a risk if they do it, though, because of what could happen in federal court. It's... You know, like all the players that won their case yesterday, they were, of course, saying they expect to join the roster today. So they're expecting it. But LSU and, I mean, with the SEC suing, it was crazy how, like, they literally, like, suing Lane Kiffin, the president, all the, like...
Everybody.
You know, it's certainly a risk if you roster them and then, you know, down the road maybe have to pay consequences for, you know, maybe forfeiture of games, things like that.
There's an important something important to mention here is that Arkansas could benefit from what happened yesterday. Brylan Green, who's the transfer defensive back from Liberty, he's one of the plaintiffs in this case. I think there's 46 plaintiffs in the case. It's not the fifth-year players trying to come back and get eligibility, I think, that concerns people. And quite frankly, I'm not up here, you know, trying to be sanctimonious about NFL players coming back and playing college football. I really don't think they should, but I think that there's, you know, I thought that one of the attorneys yesterday for the defense or the defendants made a good point yesterday. He said, hey, look at the European basketball players who are playing pro basketball who've been able to come over to the States and play in pro basketball. You know, is there not already some blurring of that lines that's happening right now? And I think that, you know, there is that's certainly an argument that I would be interested to sit down and listen to more about. What bothers me, though, is, like I said at the top of this conversation, a conference can't apply the rules that everybody has agreed upon. Like last week, the SEC ADs, 16-0 based on the reports, agreed on these penalties for if you play someone from the NFL, the NBA, and the WNBA. When they met the next day to, for lack of a better term, ratify what they had voted on the day before, the vote was 15-0. LSU's chancellor or president abstained from the vote. So, I mean, this is something that just was – this is something that was voted on last week. And I think that the fact that LSU abstained, too, tells me that they're not 100% sure what they think about this. Because they didn't vote against it. It wasn't a 15-1 vote. If you're really so, you know, like you got your heels dug in so much on this, you would vote against this and make a stand against, you know, what you think is unfair by the other teams in the conference. It's the fact that a conference can't enforce its rules, I think, is the thing that really bothers me. What the SEC's done here is they've taken a playbook out of what the Big 12 did this summer with Brendan Sorsby in Texas Tech. And it felt like before Sorsby ended up going into or trying to go into the supplemental draft, it felt like the Big 12 was going to be successful on the merits of that case. That's why I think the SEC is ultimately going to be successful in federal court on this. But we'll see. It's going to be very fascinating to see how this plays out.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, what this all boils down to is, can a conference actually enforce its own rules? You know, and that's what this is. I mean, with LSU just kind of simply doing everything they can to try and avoid the rules. I don't know. It's to me, I think this is of course, it's a very specific case. And like, we're looking at a specific thing, like you said, but we can have disagreements about if these NFL players, I know there's the whole like talk about they didn't have the foresight to know, like, there's all the term, I don't even know the exact terminology that they keep on using for it, but basically, like, they wouldn't have declared for the draft had they known this would be a thing.
And I think that's a legitimate argument.
And that's what I'm saying. We can have our, like, agreements, disagreements on that, but this is actually just a more, I think, large-scale deal about, can a conference enforce its own rules? Yeah. And that's what it boils down to.
I also find it interesting that the SEC only listed the NFL, NBA, and WNBA. There was no other mention of other professional leagues and other sports, because this is going to be something I think that's going to be challenged in other sports too.
Mm-hmm.
That's just something out there that I would just say be on the lookout for. But LSU, they play a game tomorrow. They play like College Game Day. They chose to go to Baton Rouge for this game like 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's their 500th game from what I was reading today. And, boy, now they've got this as the backdrop. Holy cow, they could not have picked a better place. Can you imagine, like, if they had decided, hey, you know, let's do Auburn-Baylor in Atlanta, and then you got all this going on in Baton Rouge. I mean, kudos to their production team, I guess, for making the right call, and then just having an absolute perfect case scenario fall into their lap.
And it's funny that, you know, Dabo Swinney is like the opposing coach, who's like the most like by the book, old school, like, yeah, let's do things like the with ethics type of coach out there. And it's like, it's just a very much contrasting game between kind of the sliminess of LSU and then the
yeah,
at times with Clemson almost holier than thou
yeah,
attitude. But because, you know, Clemson, Dabo for many years like didn't really do the portal very much, because he didn't like...
Still really does not.
Yeah, and then this summer, this past offseason when he did, got involved with a tampering situation with Ole Miss, that there's been reports that Lane Kiffin, apparently, the CBS Sports reported this, that Lane Kiffin like basically fed info to Dabo about all the Ole Miss staff was doing in that situation. And so it's like the one time that Dabo does go after like this, you know, pretty sought-after transfer, he gets involved in a massive tampering episode. And so, I don't know. It's just the contrast of these two coaches and programs this weekend. I mean, I guess the only thing they have in common is the Tigers. A Tiger is going to win this weekend.
Yeah, the Tigers from Death Valley are going to be victorious.
Yeah.
You just got to be able to enforce your rules. That's what I really come back to on this. You can't. If you can't enforce your rules, I don't know why you're even playing the games, to be honest with you. Moving on, Arkansas plays North Alabama tomorrow. Probably a few fewer eyeballs on this Arkansas-North Alabama game than what's going to be going on down in Baton Rouge. But it's a chance for Ryan Silverfield to get underway. And, you know, I wrote this today. It says tomorrow will be his 280th day on the job at the University of Arkansas. He got hired really early in the process, got hired November 30th. I know it felt like that search went on forever last fall, but he got hired early in the process, November 30th. So he's had a lot of time to, you know, be on the ground, put together this team before he coaches his first game. I'm excited to just, as Silverfield said at Media Days in Tampa a couple of months ago, rip off the rearview mirror. Let's quit talking about 2-10. Let's quit talking about 0-8. Let's quit talking about, you know, Sam Pittman and all of this other stuff. Like, I don't know how good this Arkansas football team is going to be this year. I've got my doubts they're going to win a whole lot of games. I think that you just look on paper, they don't look as talented as most of the other SEC teams are going to play. And I think the teams that they probably would match up best against are Mississippi State and Kentucky. They don't get to play those teams. Maybe Vanderbilt. They don't get to play Vanderbilt.
Well, they do.
Who are we playing?
Vanderbilt.
Oh, Vanderbilt. They do play Vanderbilt. I'm sorry. You know what? I've got a different schedule right here, and that's brain fart. They do play Vanderbilt, so they play Vanderbilt. Yeah. But they don't play Mississippi State and Kentucky, who were 14 and 15 in the SEC media poll, and Arkansas was number 16. I say all that just to say I'm excited, and I hope most people will be, just to put the past in the past and look ahead and let's see if this thing gets better. I think they're in a better situation from a lot of standpoints. I think they got a coach who's got a real attention to detail and has got a real fire in the belly to try to make this thing work. And I think that those are two important elements that I don't know that they had previously, at least maybe not to the level that I think they have with Silverfield. I think Silverfield has like held a mirror up to the Pittman tenure and shown some things that I think we all kind of realized were happening. But like when you see the energy level of a Silverfield who's 40 something years old and a Pittman who's at the very end of his career, that is striking to me. And then obviously they've gone out and they've done I just think that if you're going to have a rebuild, you've got to have a coach who's really energetic. And, you know, who really just has, like I said, that fire in the belly. I think Silverfield's got it. And I think they've done some things from a financial standpoint that probably not going to help them this year, but I think it will help them as they move forward in terms of being able to acquire players, acquire better assistant coaches, maybe retain assistant coaches who they like but might have a better opportunity somewhere else. I like where Arkansas is headed from a football standpoint under Silverfield. We'll see if he's successful. But I do think they're on better ground right now than they've been in a little while.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the big thing that stands out for me, too, is I think a lot of people, especially early on with Ryan Silverfield, tried to make this, he's the next Chad Morris comparison. And I, because to Chad's credit, young and he was pretty energetic. But this is where I think it's different. He's coming in here, he was 50 and 25 at Memphis. I get it. That's a pretty good job in that conference. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, a lot of coaches...
And some people think they underperformed.
Yeah.
Relative to their resources at Memphis, especially after, you know, teams like UCF and SMU and some of those teams moved out of the conference.
Yeah. And so I think that it's a good spot for a coach in the group of five or group of six, whatever it is, to be at Memphis, because I think it's a pretty good program at that level. But I mean, and I get it. One of these was against Arkansas. Silverfield was 5-2 against Power Four opponents while he coached at Memphis. The other coaches coming from the American Conference and Power Conference jobs this year were 4-12 in those type of games. He had success there, and I think that it's. I just come into this and I'm like, he's much more credentialed than Chad Morris, I think, was.
Chad Morris had a losing record when he came to Arkansas.
Exactly. I'm like, this. I just think people early on wanted to hate the hire. I mean, there weren't very many of them, but a few people went and protested on the day that he was hired, because I think that it's one of those deals where it just wasn't a blow-you-away type of name and hire. But I think over the past however many months, he's done a lot of things to make people get on the train. And like you said, with just kind of contrasting with Sam Pittman, there's been some very, you know, I think big differences as far as like early on in the job, he got the top in-state players to flip to Arkansas. I don't think the in-state recruiting was really there.
It was horrible.
Yeah, with Pittman. And then another thing that, I mean, I think maybe some of the flack was undeserved for Pittman on this, because I'm not sure it was as severe as maybe some made it seem, but like as far as having former players and coaches involved with the program, I know that there was the whole episode that one year where I think it was Joe Adams and Jarius Wright were at the stadium and wanted to go down and they got turned away.
How ironic.
Yeah.
But right. With Joe Adams coming to talk to the team today.
It's like, but Ryan is completely opened the doors to like all former players. He's been very adamant of like, you don't have to have been an All-American. If you played here, come back, and we want you to be a part of this. I think that he's just done a lot of the things that connect with the fan base in a way that contrasts the perception under Sam Pittman. I just think that there's a anytime there's a change, you wonder how it's going to go. But at least in everything over the past 9-plus months since Silverfield's been here, it seems like he's checked a lot of boxes off that resonate with people in the state.
I was pulling up the schedule here and got a little Home Depot ad. the thing with Sam, and I've said this a number of times, is that he what he was hired to do at Arkansas, that was not the job that he actually stepped into. Think about how much different things were in December 2019. You didn't really have mass transfers like you have now. You didn't have NIL. It was still all about that relationship and the ability to recruit players. And, you know, that was what Pittman, I mean, that was like the foundation of Sam Pittman's success, was having, as an assistant coach, was having good relationships and being able to recruit at a really high level. That like, if you ask anybody what his strengths as an assistant coach were, it was not so much his teaching offensive line play. He was good at that, and he was respected for that, but it was his ability to recruit, and it was his ability to build relationships. And he steps into, in 2020, a season that's, you know, we know how different that was. And then, you know, after that, college football became way more transactional than it had ever been before by many, many, many times over. He was learning on the job. And I think what you have in Silverfield is you have a coach who, his first year coaching college football, not as set in his ways. I just say coaching college football, but as a head coach. And he'd been in college football for a lot, you know, less time because he'd been in the NFL too. I think he adapted to what this era looks like at Memphis, and that's why he was successful. That's why he had the success that he had at Memphis, is because he was able to adapt. It's just, you don't have a coach who I feel like is learning on the job now, like I felt like you did have for at least some of those years when Pittman was here. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, again, I don't know how successful Silverfield's going to be. He may not be more successful than Sam Pittman was. I mean, he's stepping into a setting now that Pittman never had to do, where you got to play an extra SEC game every year. But I have a sense that there's going to be that it's not going to be as doom and gloom as I think maybe some people feel.
And like Sam Pittman, I think that Ryan did a really good job with his first Arkansas staff of. He brought in some very respected coordinators. Like, I get it, people probably look at Tim Kramsey and they're like, oh, he's just been the Memphis OC. It's because he stayed loyal to Silverfield at Memphis. He had programs trying to hire him. I mean, if you look at their scoring averages at Memphis, they were always, like, very high nationally. And he just stayed at Memphis because of what they had going on there, and now he's at Arkansas. And then Ron Roberts is, I mean, a lot of what SEC teams do defensively is based off some of the stuff that he's done in the past with, you know, his whole creeper system, these blitzes that he does, the disguises. I think that they've got a really good staff of coordinators. Chad Lunsford, he's been around the block in the SEC. And he was a head coach at Georgia Southern, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he got two coordinators with head coaching experience. And so I just think that you look at his staff, you look at, you know, kind of how he's adapted, and there's just a renewed sense of energy, I think, more than anything. There's a lot more energy right now.
As far as this game, Arkansas's a 40.5-point favorite. We'll transition into our predictions now. They're a 40.5-point favorite. You look at how Arkansas, and I do want to be cautious to say that not every FCS team is made equally, right? I mean, you got North Dakota State, who just transitioned from FCS to FBS. They're certainly in a way different weight class than UAPB. I mean, that's a pretty striking comparison there, because I got UAPB on the brain because they lost so bad against Missouri last night. But so not every FCS team is made equally, and not every FBS team is made equally. And quite frankly, it's really hard sometimes, or a lot of times, to look back at last year or 2 years ago and make any type of correlation to what's going to happen this year, because there's so much turnover. Arkansas's got almost 80 new players on its roster this year. North Alabama's got between 70 and 75 new players on its roster this year. Both of those teams went 2-10 a year ago. But let's just use some historical context here for what these teams have done against the higher or the lower level. Arkansas, in the last 5 years, they've beaten FCS teams by an average of 42 points per game. North Alabama, in the last 5 years, they've lost 7 games against FBS teams by an average of 39.6 points. So if North Alabama plays with Arkansas, it's going to be a huge surprise, just based on what these programs have done in the past. One other note, Silverfield at Memphis had two of those wins over North Alabama by scores of 59-0 and 40-0. So that kind of lays a baseline, I feel like, for why this point spread is so big, Arkansas by 40.5. I would never, if I were betting, I would never put down to take the team going to cover 40.5 points. I think that there's just way too many variables against that. I'm not going to be surprised if Arkansas wins the game by a big margin. Maybe they win by 42 or 45 or whatever. That's an awfully big margin, but I think they're going to win this game comfortably. I just think that their athleticism is way better than what North Alabama has, you know, across the board. I think North Alabama's got some athletes. I got some guys that came over from Memphis, and as Silverfield said this week, we wouldn't have recruited them to Memphis if we didn't think they could play at a high level. But I think Arkansas wins this big. I just don't know if I go with 40.5 points big.
I think I will.
You think so?
I just do. I mean, North Alabama, credit to Brent. How do you say his last name?
Brent Dearman.
Dearman. There's people from my hometown with the same spelling of that name. It's Dearman. And so it's tough for me.
That's
Brent
fun.
Dearman, he definitely, I think, you look at his record at North Alabama and you're like, holy cow, how is he still the
9-27.
Coach? It's because they knew what he was inheriting and that it might take some time. This could be his best North Alabama team yet. It might be. I mean, this is their first
time. It's a low bar. I mean, he's never won more than three games.
And they won their season opener for the first time in like 7 or 8 years, something like that.
This is their eighth year of being in the FCS, and it was their first year in the FCS was the last time that they had won a season opener.
This could be his best North Alabama team, and Arkansas should still beat them very, very soundly. I mean, it's just the talent level is so much different. I get these week one games are so frustrating a lot of the times because I like watching all the SEC teams play, but most of them play like an FCS team in week one, and it's just not competitive. If it is competitive, you're really concerned about what it means for team. Yeah. I remember, was it Chad Morris's second year whenever Portland State made it a game, and you knew Arkansas was in serious trouble?
I mean, even go back 3 years ago when they played Western Carolina, and they won the game by 43, but they only averaged like 2.5 yards per rush.
Yeah, they couldn't run the
ball. They couldn't move Western Carolina's defensive front, and it's like, well, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, whenever, sure enough.
Yeah, and that was a problem. Last year, I mean, remember the first drive of the game for Alabama A&M against Arkansas?
Knife and butter.
Yeah. And so defensively, it was like that game kind of set the expectation for, okay, this is going to be a defense that has a lot of trouble. Yeah, I think that happens. These games, even if you win big, they can tell you a lot about the flaws in your team, especially like in certain areas. Like, we had Brandon Marcello in here the other day. He was talking about what he saw in the scrimmage, miscommunication in the secondary. Are we going to see some of that on Saturday? Because you can have miscommunication in the secondary, and maybe you can recover against a team like North Alabama. Maybe when you play Utah or Georgia here in the next couple of weeks, maybe they're able to take advantage of some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Offensive line play, quarterback play. I mean, that's the big question on this year's team is quarterback play.
If you walk away from this game not feeling good about quarterback play, then
you're probably not going to feel good about quarterback play the rest of the year.
And that's what I'm saying. It's if you're watching a team like Arkansas as closely as we do, these games can be somewhat interesting to try and find those things. I just hate the entire week one slate because I promise I'm not sitting and watching the entirety of Missouri UAPB. Although on a Thursday, whenever it's like one of the only games on, it makes it a little bit easier to watch.
Did you watch the end of Colorado Georgia Tech last night?
No, but I saw the highlights.
Yeah, here's like the biggest mistake. Coaches get paid just gobs of money to be conservative, and it drives me absolutely crazy. You're Georgia Tech. You get this big pass play, like 40, 50 yards, to get yourself into, you know, like at the Colorado 30, 25, something like that. But you still got 28 seconds, and you still got a timeout. You've got time to go try to score a touchdown, and you sit on it, and you try to kick a field goal, and you get it blocked. And in my opinion, you know, serves you right. Like, don't be conservative. I go to so many football games, Ethan, at just all kinds of levels. And the thing, I tell you, the play that worries me the most for whatever team, you know, I'm calling their game, or maybe it's, you know, just a team that I'm a fan of, is extra points and field goals, because there are so many things that have to go right on extra points and field goals for them not to go wrong. And, you know, I mean, hey, it went wrong for Georgia Tech last night. They got a guy on the edge. He just kind of puts out his hand and lets a guy run on by him, and Colorado blocks it. And just, I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, don't play for the field goal. Don't play for the field goal. It just, it even when it goes right, it still feels like the wrong play.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always, there's a lot that goes into, because there's risk involved, because I'm sure Arkansas would have rather taken a knee and kicked a field goal at Memphis last year rather than fumble the ball, you know, that close to the end zone. It's just, there's a lot that goes into it. I'm all about trying to run the clock down while also not being over, like, don't be overly conservative.
When you got a defense tired in the fourth quarter, just go at them. That's my philosophy there, but I'm not being paid however much money Brent Key's getting. I can promise you that.
All I was saying is I don't watch all these SEC FCS games, so it gets really boring, because I'm not going to sit there and watch, you know, I don't even know what some of the other games are.
Well, Utah beat Idaho last night, 66-14.
I watched some of that, but like, it's,
they're ready.
But like, for, I just get tired of how lopsided the talent disparity is. I get it.
Not a lot of great games this week.
I will say, but there are, like, to your point about, you can learn maybe some faults of a team like Missouri. Honestly, last night UAPB got in their backfield way too much. I was like, what's going on? I think Missouri was down an offensive lineman, but still. Yeah, these games get boring. That's why I'm excited for LSU Clemson and some of the other games this weekend. I know Louisville Ole Miss, I think that's Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But
Sunday, I believe.
Sunday.
Yeah. So. UTEP plays Oklahoma tonight. Miami plays Stanford tonight. Fresno State and USC. We won't pick any of those. Just kind of looking through the other games here real quick. Like, the Apple Cup is a season opener this year between Washington and Washington State. That's kind of interesting, because you're so used to seeing that at the end of the year, at least in some past years. That's been the case. The big game Saturday, really, in my opinion, the only game that's worth watching from just a standpoint of two brand name teams is Clemson and LSU. LSU is a 10-point favorite in this game. You think they win? You think they can block out all the distractions?
I do think they win. It's going to be crazy. If it was at Clemson, I might feel a little bit different. But I just think in that stadium,
I'll say this about Clemson. Their defense has got the ability to keep them in games. And, you know, like, remember last year, the LSU-Clemson game, 17-10. Like Clemson, they can play slobber knock football, I think, with the best of them.
That LSU offense was atrocious last year, though. I know. I mean, Arkansas kept it low scoring.
I could see Clemson keeping this game a lower scoring game and giving themselves a chance to maybe go down and score late and win it. I think LSU is a better team, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Clemson. Let's put it this way. I'm not going to underestimate Clemson. No way. You know, everybody's talking about Louisville Ole Miss on Sunday night. There's actually going to be two games that are going to be head-to-head against each other. You've got Wisconsin playing Notre Dame. The game's going to be played at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. Why they play that game at Lambeau, I don't really understand it. Notre Dame's a 20.5-point favorite. It's going to be interesting for Notre Dame. They've got a quarterback in CJ Carr, who a lot of people think could be a Heisman candidate this year, but they lost their two best running backs from last year, including Jeremiah Love, who I thought was the best player in the country.
Yeah, and I think they'll be fine. Wisconsin, I'm going to be interested to watch them this year, just because Eric Mateos, who was the offensive line coach at Arkansas, he's there now. Brought one of the linemen, I'm blanking on who, but I think Notre Dame should handle them. That's cool that it's at Lambeau.
Yeah, I guess it's a neat venue for a football game, but you got Camp Randall. Why not play this game on your campus? I don't understand that. I did overlook one thing. I think that this, you know, I overlooked this on brand names. Baylor plays Auburn in Atlanta on Saturday. Neither of them are ranked. That's why it's not showing up on my schedule here. That's a very fascinating game to me, because you got a couple of really high-profile quarterbacks who have transferred in there. You got Byron Brown, who came with Alex Golas from South Florida to Auburn. He brought, like, his whole South Florida team with him to Auburn, it feels like. And then you got DJ Lagway, who was supposed to be one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC last year at Florida, and it didn't go well for him. But he's at Baylor, where you've got Dave Aranda as their coach. And, I mean, this is do-or-die time for Dave Aranda at Baylor. I wonder what kind of fire you get out of Baylor against a team that's going to be going, you know, like through, it's going to be a team that's played a lot of games together, but never in an Auburn uniform. I wonder what you get out of that. And it's going to be a home crowd, mostly for Auburn, being played there in Atlanta.
And for Byron Brown, this was the last year against Lagway in Florida. That was the game that got him and Golish kind of on the radar. It's a rematch of a quarterback matchup that was between two other teams last year. That's how you know you're in 2026, you know, another non-conference one. So I just think that that's a game that I expect Auburn to win. I think Auburn's going to be all right this year. And I just don't have a whole lot of faith in Baylor.
We won't pick it, but Monday night, SMU plays at Florida State, big ACC matchup. SMU, kind of surprisingly, a three-point favorite on the road in Tallahassee. Florida State won last week. SMU, this will be their first game. I know SMU's had some questions about their quarterback and his health, so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out there. And then finally, Louisville and Ole Miss. This is the one that I think, if you're just picking a quote-unquote upset, by the way, I think Baylor might beat Auburn. I didn't say that a second ago. But Louisville's ranked number 24. Ole Miss is ranked number 9. Ole Miss is a 6.5-point favorite. This is being played in Nashville. Again, you got your stadium in Louisville. You got your stadium in Oxford. Why are you playing the game in Nashville? It's not even at the new stadium in Nashville because I don't think that one's finished until next year for the Titans. They're going to play this, there on the river. It's I'll tell you why I think Louisville wins this game, and this is just really isn't great analysis, to be honest with you. I don't feel like games that everybody looks to for the entire offseason really ever live up to the hype. I think LSU or Ole Miss is going to go down before they play that game in week three. I just have a feeling that it's not going to live up to the hype that everybody has had for it for the last 9 months. And I think Ole Miss might be susceptible here against Louisville. We don't know what kind of coach Pete Golding is. We know that he won a playoff game last year. We know he got him, deeper into the playoffs. But I think Jeff Brohm's a really good coach, and I think Louisville might go in there. They're picked to challenge for the ACC this year. I don't see any reason why they couldn't go in there and beat Ole Miss.
I'm completely on the other side. I think Ole Miss is going to win by more.
I think
than
I just talked myself
points.
Into this because I don't think Ole Miss. I told you it's not great analysis. I just don't think Ole Miss and LSU can live up to all the hype.
Also, maybe not great analysis, but I just don't. I am not sold on the ACC at all. Yeah, I mean, I just got done watching Georgia Tech last night lose to Colorado, and I don't even know where Georgia Tech was picked in the ACC. But
it does feel to me, though, like what Crystal Ball is doing at Miami is raising going to raise the level of play in the ACC to try to keep up with that program.
For sure, for sure. I just don't – I look at that game, and I think Ole Miss is going to – I just expect them to dominate the line of scrimmage both ways, and I just think that it's the – I mean, you've got Trinidad Chambliss on your side, and – I'm definitely not picking against Ole Miss in that game. I think they'll cover the 6.5 for sure. I don't really know a whole lot about Louisville, but I think Ole Miss is really talented, and I think that they're I think they could contend to win the SEC this year.
Golding won two playoff games last year, by the way, almost got them to the national championship when they lost to Miami. So those are the games of the weekend. Really not a great slate across college football. Arkansas and North Alabama at 3:15 tomorrow. I think they just updated the temperature. It's supposed to be about 203. That's the high now at Razorback Stadium. No, it's 101. And it's probably going to be the hottest game that Arkansas has ever played in terms of the actual temperature at the kickoff of the game. 3:15 on SEC Network, WholeHogSports.com. We're going to have coverage of this throughout the weekend. Also, some other sports are in season. We'll have some stories from their games as well this weekend. We're not going to have a podcast Monday because it's Labor Day. Ethan and I will be working, but they won't be working back there in the production room. So we won't be back until Tuesday, and that's when Chip Souza will be in here with Anthony Hicks. We'll see you next week. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns this September as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship presented by P&G. Join us September 21st through the 27th at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers to watch the world's best female golfers compete. Plus, enjoy family-friendly activities, food, and entertainment all week long. Tickets start at just $10. Visit www.nwachampionship.com to learn more and purchase your tickets today.